This is Packers Now.
Tom Rodgers looking, throws left side of the end zone. Yes! Touchdown! Devontae Adams!
Place for all your Packers news.
Lofts it over the left side into the end zone. Intercepted! Adrian Amos!
Get the latest updates on the green and gold.
Snap to Aaron Rodgers. Sets, fires, right side, got Jordan coming left at the 30. Touchdown!
It's always Packers season at Packers Now. Right here, right now.
He's good, and the Packers are going to the NFC Championship game.
I'm your host, Ben Kurkowski, and the season is over for the Packers, and I shouldn't be so upset. I had no expectations for the Packers to ever even get to this point. We weren't supposed to be here. We weren't supposed to be in the playoffs, and we weren't supposed to be consistently competitive against some of the best teams in the NFL, and yet we were. And I should be happy about that. But I was truly devastated on Saturday. Not because I think we are a better team than the 49ers. I'm not going to be unrealistic. The 49ers, over the course of the season, were one of the best teams in the NFL. I was devastated because for those 3.5 hours, even if it was just for a short amount of time, the Packers were the better team on Saturday, and the better team did not win that game. That's why I'm devastated. And there's a couple of major reasons why, but it was one of the biggest things we talked about going into this game because we knew the weather was going to be challenging, and both teams were going to make some mistakes, but which team could take advantage of those mistakes to help them win the game? And there were 5 game-changing plays for the Packers in this game, crucial mistakes that sadly will define this game. And the biggest of which is the missed field goal by Anders Carlson. Carlson missed a 41-yarder in the rain, but still you're supposed to be able to make that kick. And Carlson struggled all year. There wasn't a kicker in the NFL that missed more kicks than Carlson did this season. And if you heard Matt LaFleur, he said, "I just pray every time he goes to kick." Now, if you heard that quote, it was taken way out of context. Matt LaFleur has sort of a dry humor, people. People say that all the time, and they don't know if he's making a joke or being completely serious. So I really don't think he meant he has no trust in Carlson to make a kick. But based off the stats, he probably shouldn't have any trust. This guy struggled so much. This season, of 34 qualifying kickers, Carlson was ranked 32nd. He was awful. The problem was the Packers didn't give themselves any other option except Carlson, okay? Mason Crosby's leg was done, guys. Mason Crosby was not a good option. Believe it or not, he was worse than Carlson was this year, okay? The problem was the Packers, and so then the Packers had no other option, and what they decided to do to help Carlson's mental capacity, they decided to not bring any competition. So they didn't even have a chance to check out other options in camp. And I think that's where things went wrong. The Dallas Cowboys, for example, brought in Brandon Aubrey into camp. And had they seen, had the Packers done that and seen Carlson next to Aubrey, heck, they might have decided to keep Aubrey over him, or at least it would have kept a different team from signing him in the offseason. This isn't against the rules to have two kickers. Sometimes kickers get hurt and you need to be prepared anyways. Aubrey in July had just finished 2 seasons as his team's kicker and done a great job. So he was still sitting out there for anyone to grab, and the Packers could have had that opportunity. Aubrey ended up finishing this season as the 6th best kicker in the NFL, while Carlson, like we said, was far from that. He was one of the worst in the league. So even if the Packers had cut Carlson going into September, because they're like, hey, we brought in Aubrey. Hey, we brought in Carlson. Aubrey's the better guy, and I think we're just going to have to go with him. That would have been okay. Brian Gutekunst has made so many great moves, okay, but he needs to be okay with cutting draft picks. People make mistakes, guys. And even if you find a kicker, if you find a kicker that's just better than the guy you drafted, you got to go with the guy who's better. You got to bring in competition to camp. And if Carlson couldn't handle the competition mentally, if he can't compete without totally crumbling in on himself on the practice field, what the heck is he going to do? How is he going to handle the pressure when everything's on the line like it was in this game? Gutekunst drafted incredibly well last year, but only taking one chance at the kicker position might have been his biggest mistake. Like receiver, for example, he spent 3 draft picks at receiver. And when you do that, you're hoping they're all good. But truly, realistically, yeah, you're probably expecting one of those guys to be good. And the same could be said of how we could have handled the kicker position as well. Same with punter. And I think even quarterback, keep bringing in guys and always look to find hidden talent, because at these crucial positions, if you can find a diamond in the rough, it can be so big for your franchise. One of the main problems I have with Carlson and the choice of Anders Carlson is I'm not sure if he's the guy that Gutekunst wanted, or he's just the guy who Rich Bisaccia likes because he coached his brother for the Raiders and his brother he thought was really good. And to me, it just kind of feels like nepotism. Like, yeah, he's the guy, he's the best man for the job, but they didn't bring any other competition in that was easily available to you, because he was that kicker for the Cowboys was available to everybody. And he wasn't even the best rookie kicker in the NFL this season. And there's only 3. I will finish off by saying I do get it, though, why we stuck with Carlson for the duration of the season. We weren't supposed to make the playoffs, so giving this kicker a year to work out his kinks is probably wise. There's a lot of talented kickers. They just need a chance to figure out the mental part of the game. And if they can do that, they can be extremely successful. But most of the time, they aren't given the chance. And that's true for Carlson as well. He has incredible length, strength, incredible talent. And so if he can figure out this mental capacity to be more consistent, he could be a special kicker. Surprisingly enough, Carlson actually had a higher field goal percentage than Mason Crosby did as a rookie even. And the Packers didn't give up on Mason, which was extremely difficult, but it was the correct choice when he was young and he was struggling, because it led to having such a clutch kicker for so many years, minus probably 2 seasons of 15. So I get it. The Packers didn't think they were going to be in the playoffs. They didn't think it was going to matter, that it was going to matter to this magnitude, that he was going to struggle in his rookie year probably. And so I get it from Brian Gutekunst's perspective in that way, but it ended up biting us in the butt in the biggest moment. But moving back to the main topic, our big mistakes. The next big mistake was Darnell Savage having the ball thrown directly to him, drops the interception. And this is probably even bigger than Carlson's, honestly. And it wasn't just interception, guys. It looked like Darnell Savage, with his speed, could have had another pick six, which would have given the Packers a 10-0 lead, a 2-score lead, which could have given the Packers so much more comfortability to run the offense the way they wanted to, dictating the game, and also putting the pressure on the 49ers to drop back and pass, giving the Packers even more opportunities to rush the passer, which was the 49ers' biggest weakness, is pass protection, especially true pass sets. The third major mistake was Anthony Johnson Jr., rookie safety on the George Kittle touchdown. The Packers are in man coverage. He's supposed to be playing deep at safety, and he comes forward, tries jumping a route to Brandon Ayuk, leaving George Kittle wide open for the 32-yard touchdown. That was a third down, and had Johnson done his job, 49ers most likely kick a field goal there instead of a touchdown. So another big play. Fourth, Keyshawn Nixon drops an interception as well. Not as terrible as Savage's drop, but still totally catchable. And that would have given the ball to the Packers at the 49ers' 25-yard line, giving the Packers another easy scoring opportunity, at least another 3 points on the board. And then the fifth, so there's 6 actually big mistakes. The fifth was on the very next drive. After that, Jordan Love throws a ball to Tucker Kraft on the move. It was a short pass. He definitely should have been able to make this pass, but he throws it behind Tucker Kraft, and this is a huge mistake. Not necessarily that it was a bad throw. It should have just been a bad throw, and nothing should have happened, but Kraft sticks out one hand trying to haul in what I would consider pretty much an uncatchable pass, and because he does that, he ends up tipping the ball way up in the air, giving the defense an easy opportunity to intercept it. That's a bad throw by Jordan Love. It's not a turnover-worthy play. That's just a young, inexperienced player making a poor choice on what to do with that football. Let the football hit the ground and live to play another down. Can't tip that ball up in the air. And then there's the sixth big mistake by the Packers. the obvious interception by Jordan Love at the end of the game. Here, it's what the Packers and most people call the mortal sin, which is what Love referenced after the game. But it's first down, two timeouts, 52 seconds left in the game. They only need a field goal to tie it up and go to overtime. Love escapes the pocket, and he couldn't run anywhere, but he could have easily thrown that ball out of bounds. Still with 46 seconds, two timeouts, and it would have been second down on your own 36-yard line. Totally possible to still get into field goal range. You didn't need to get a deep shot on that play. It was just way too aggressive when he didn't have to try and make that throw at that point quite yet, and he just missed it. When you're rolling to the right like that and you're throwing back across your body, you lose velocity. So that ball is not traveling as fast, and the defenders are tougher to see when you're moving the opposite direction as them, and the defenders then have more time to catch up with that football and pick it off. It was an awful mistake, and we've seen it several times in our Packers history of elite quarterback play to have that type of decision at the end of the game, which was an absolutely crushing finish for the Packers. The crazy thing is Jordan Love made what I would call one critical error, a terrible decision at the end of the game that gets picked off. And then he had a bad throw that got really unlucky, which led to two interceptions. Brock Purdy did the exact same thing, though. A terrible decision right to Darnell Savage. He drops it. And then a bad throw that also probably should have been picked off by Keyshawn Nixon. Two big mistakes for Jordan Love leads to two interceptions. Two big mistakes by Brock Purdy led to nothing. It's not just about mistakes. It's about, can the other team take advantage of those mistakes? And the Packers were unable to do that in this game as they turned the ball over four times in this game, including the missed field goal. And then the 49ers only turned the ball over once on the blocked field goal. But the Packers didn't even get the ball back since it was halftime at that point. This game came down to the mistakes, and the Packers were unable to take advantage of the 49ers' mistakes, which ultimately led to our downfall, even though on Saturday night we were clearly the better team. And it wasn't just mistakes by the Packers. It was also poor officiating. Early on in this game, the Packers go for it on 4th-and-1, and the Packers rush up to the line of scrimmage, do a QB sneak, and quite clearly pick up the first down, and the line judge gives them a terrible spot. And of course, the ruling on the field isn't overturned because it's just too close to call. Such a crucial play in this game. Had the Packers picked up that first down, they had a real chance to get a touchdown. And at the worst, another field goal opportunity. It's such a bad call. And this is why we don't trust the NFL, because this is ridiculous. We have the best technology with cameras everywhere, and yet they can't make the right call on the field. Then the next big mistake was on the play before the George Kittle touchdown, where the 49ers first took the lead. I'm not sure if you can remember this, but on the first down, two plays before that George Kittle touchdown, Brock Purdy gets pressured, but is still inside the pocket. And then throws a pass deep right down the sideline, and there isn't a receiver within 25 yards in any direction. That's called intentional grounding. He was in the pocket, threw the ball away, inside the pocket, and there's no receiver anywhere near. And they didn't even consider throwing the flag. I have no idea why. That should have been 2nd-and-17, basically putting the 49ers in a place where it would have been so difficult to pick up a first down, forcing the 49ers to probably make a field goal attempt rather than that for sure touchdown, making the game simply 3-3 at that point in the game rather than the 49ers taking the lead. And again, why can't the refs get this right? The Spring League has a sky judge, a judge to come in, call flags that were missed on the field or get rid of a flag that was a mistake or call a pass dropped if it was dropped, or just a person who's unbiased or a team of people who is watching the game with every single view so that we can make the game fair. Nobody wants a game that they win unfairly. I really don't think people want that. I hate it. I hate it when things aren't just called how they're supposed to be called. Every fan wants the team who played the best to win the game and the team that made the most of their opportunities to win the game. And that's what this could allow. And I don't understand why the NFL is so far behind in fixing these mistakes by officials. The Packers, yeah, they made their mistakes. They got some really bad calls. We did have some lucky moments, though, as well. Keyshawn Nixon returns it. Guys, that was Nixon's biggest return of the year, by the way, for 73 yards. That was a great return for sure. But guys, my wife and I laughed out loud when Nixon made the All-Pro team as a returner. This guy was not good this season. The only reason he has some breakout kick returns is just because the amount of returns he had this year. Nixon had 32 returns that he ran out this year. That was 10 more than any other kick returner in the NFL. And he's being paid $6 million a year to do that and be a bad slot corner. The Packers don't really have another option at slot corner, so I get it, but he's not really that good at either. And there were only 6 kick returners in the NFL who brought more value to their team by being a returner than just getting a touchback every single time. And Keyshawn Nixon was not one of those guys. The data shows that of those 42 returners, only 6 beat the data. Then just taking a touchback is the right thing to do. Nixon is a bad decision maker, got extremely lucky because the chance you have at a huge return is just as likely as a fumble. And the Packers got lucky. They jumped. Nixon has a 73-yard return. He comes back to the middle of the field, which is so risky, and gets knocked. Ball comes out, and luckily our guy jumps on it. But it could have easily been a turnover after a huge play. And so very, very scary, and that was a very lucky moment for the Packers. I do want to give a lot of credit to some areas of this team, though, for keeping us in this game, because there was some impressive parts to the Packers, and one of those was our offensive design was just awesome. Once again, just an incredible showing by Matt LaFleur. This guy is a heck of a coach. In the rain, he gave this team, this offense, plenty of chances to win. Great design, great game plan. I thought our offense played very well overall. Some smart plays in the biggest moments, forcing those big pass interference calls on third and long. Packers unlikely to pick up the first down. Just take a deep shot down the field, underthrow those passes, get run into. If your receivers know how to get run into, it's the smartest play in the book. If your receiver can do it right, simply stop to try to catch the ball and then just get run over. It's a great move. And I think probably one of the most underrated in the NFL to get a free 40 yards. Our running game was so good for weeks. I thought against the 49ers, we were going to struggle, but we still were so good. Aaron Jones was just amazing. I never thought he would be this good at this time of his career. He's literally defied father time. It's been incredible. He was so good. Our receivers doing such a great job blocking in this game. Again, amazing what they did to help out and make our running game so efficient. Wicks takes out Nick Bosa. Christian Watson takes out Chase Young. Those are dudes. Those are number one, number two overall picks in the draft. These guys are supposed to be the best of the best. And then Jordan Love in the two biggest games of the year, in against Dallas and against the 49ers, did not take one sack, played a big role. Even though he wasn't having the best day throwing the football in the rain, he had the awareness to not take any sacks, which led to a very efficient offense. And in this game and in the game before this, our defense was not the issue. They made so many stops in this game, kept the score down early, allowed our offense to take a huge lead, like they have for weeks, against one of the best offenses in the NFL. And we knew if we were going to beat the 49ers, we had to get the lead early. And having a few stops on defense was the way to make that happen. And this defense still held an elite offense to just 24 points, which is very impressive. And I thought Joe Barry, this defense, did a great job. But it's over. Joe Barry has officially been fired. And this is not what we thought. We had all the reports that Joe Barry had a contract that was not going to be up until 2024. And so everyone just kind of got to a point right now that they assumed Matt LaFleur was just going to keep him. But after going through all the data over the last couple of years, Matt LaFleur has made a big decision to say, you know what? This isn't good enough. And it hasn't been good enough. Yes, Joe Barry has come in through big time in some big moments and some big games this year, especially against some of the best competition. But on average, he is not doing enough for this defense. He is consistently ending games. He plays this defense that lets teams just literally walk up the field, jog up the field, maybe not run, but jog up the field, get 50, 70 yards in a minute's time, and then usually gives up the big play. And usually that's when all they need is a field goal to win the game. We've seen that multiple times this year. So I just think this was totally the right decision by the Packers. And everyone's been banging the drum for this to happen for so, so long. And I am just so happy the Packers, Matt LaFleur, finally was able to make this decision, because this is not an easy decision to fire someone probably you worked the closest with out of anybody on your staff. But he did it because it's the right decision. And I don't know what Joe Barry's future is. Maybe it's just totally done for him because that's just the way it has to be. But he did find a way to actually have some good game plans against some of the best competition, or find a way to get his team to play as the underdogs. And maybe that's just more of a Matt LaFleur, Rich Bisaccia thing. I'm not sure. But he did have his bright moments in the biggest games. And this San Francisco 49ers game was not the reason they lost this game, was their defense. That's for sure. But overall, his totality of play, giving teams like the Panthers 30 points when they haven't scored more than 10 in like 10 weeks or something crazy. Yeah, that's just not okay. And we have to move on, and we cannot settle for average defensive coordinator play, inconsistent defensive coordinator play. We need to find a guy who can think differently, who cannot live off of what offenses are doing and have to react. But we need a defensive coordinator who can make them get the most out of his defensive players. I think we've seen examples of incredible, incredible defensive coordinators who are able to deem circumstances, deem what offenses are doing to them. And I don't think Joe Barry's that guy. I don't know who that guy is right now. We are going to talk more about this, but this is just brand new news. Obviously, first name that comes to mind for years. The first choice for Matt LaFleur was Jim Leonard. Jim Leonard took kind of a year off of coaching in a way after not getting the head coach for the Badgers job. He wanted him to be their defensive coordinator. He's done incredible things in college football. I'd be curious if he's the guy. Maybe there's someone else on the market he didn't expect to be out there right now, and that helped make the decision. You know, Brandon Staley was a terrible head coach, but everyone knows when it comes to as a defensive coordinator, he does do an incredible job if he's able to just focus on that. So maybe that's a name. I'm not sure, but we need a guy who can help our defense. Okay, we have talented players. Get the most out of those players, and we got to find a defense coordinator that can do just that. And then one other person who did not live up to his talent for most of the year was Rashawn Gary. Where was Rashawn Gary for this game? And where was Rashawn Gary since he's got his new contract on October 30th and then literally disappeared off this planet? Okay, from weeks 1 to 8, guys, Rashawn Gary was awesome. He was a top 10 edge rusher in the NFL, totally deserving of his new contract. But since week 9, the week after he's got his contract, Rashawn Gary has not even been a top 50 guys, edge rusher in the NFL. That's bogus. That's crap. That's not because he was dealing with an injury. No, this guy lost his motivation, stopped trying as hard during the work week. He started eating Cheetos because he got paid the big bucks. That's frustrating. Had Gary played up to the level he could play at, we win this game because he had one of the best matchups you could ask for on the season and just had an above average game. And in the biggest games, in the most crucial moments, you need big plays. An elite edge rusher gives you that. But Rashawn Gary was nothing close to that since week 9 of the season when he got paid. And I think that's bull. And I just can't even believe it that these guys can get paid this much money and then they're just like, yep, I made it. Cool. I'm done. And they sit back when so many other people are relying on them. And it's that crap makes me very upset. And I don't know how you work that out in players, motivation, that once they get paid that they'll actually keep trying and they'll keep training. But Rashawn Gary did not do that. And it's terrible. The other thing that totally killed us in this game, though, was the injury to Zach Tom at right tackle. And I know the 49ers lost Deebo Samuel, and that's a very tough loss as well. But I do think the 49ers also have other weapons to make up for that loss, that they have depth at that position. The Packers did not have another offensive tackle they could truly trust. We already lost our starting left tackle, who was our highest paid player on our offense, and then we lost our starting right tackle in this game. If you look back at most of the Packers' playoff losses, that's a very consistent theme, is we have not had one or both of our starting offensive tackles, and this was another one of those games. Josh Nyman came in for the final 26 snaps, and it's not a ton, but after Tom got hurt and our offense had to totally change because Nyman could not protect against Nick Bosa whatsoever. Nyman allowed pressure to Nick Bosa around 30% of the time on those true pass sets, and that type of pressure percentage would make you the most disruptive pass rusher in the NFL. And so that kind of disadvantage makes things significantly tougher for your offense. And I think played a big role in our inefficiency at times in the second half of this game. Just because Love was not sacked doesn't mean it's still easy. And our offense had to change because of how disruptive Nick Bosa was when he was faced up against a backup offensive tackle like Josh Nyman. So not having both of your starting offensive tackles and not having an elite player on your defensive line are both, I believe, just almost impossible things to work through and to make it through when you're facing off against the best teams in the NFL when you get to the playoffs. And the Packers found themselves in that position in this game. You could say one of those two things were true almost every single year the Packers have lost in the playoffs, except way back probably in 2011. But every loss since, one or both of those things have been true, and it was true again in this game with a Rashawn Gary who's not playing up to par, and with Zach Tom going down and then already having the loss of David Bakhtiari. And yet, the biggest thing still, even though we had some things happen, the biggest thing, the biggest reason why we lost this game was clearly the bad officiating and all the mistakes we talked about and shooting ourselves in the foot. The Packers, when you do those things, were pretty much obviously going to lose this game. And if you told me before the game that we'd have these six critical errors, there'd be these two very intense bad officiating mistakes that if you told me that before the game, I would say the Packers got crushed, okay? But wait, they didn't even get crushed. Against the best team in the NFC, they lost by 3 points. The Packers had a chance to win this game. And if you count up most of those officiating errors and just some of the Packers' mistakes, you'll find yourself recounting the score of this game to be like 34-13. That's how well the Packers played overall in this game from a play-to-play perspective. And that's why this game is so hard. We had a chance to not just beat the two best teams in the NFC, but crush them, then go to Detroit and beat our division rival the same way the Packers did in 2010 as the last team to make the playoffs and then go to the Super Bowl three games on the road and beat their NFC North winner in the NFC Championship game on the road with a team that early on in the year nobody thought should have been there. To me, I think the talent on this roster still has a long ways to go. But this Packers team, not on paper, okay, but in how well they were playing together in the game planning and the execution for the most part, they were one of the most dominant teams in the NFL over the last 8 weeks, and especially the last 2 weeks. They truly were. And something you don't get every season is good health. And for the most part, the Packers were pretty darn healthy compared to most NFL rosters. And this sounds crazy, but this was their chance. This is where the stars truly aligned, a chance to have a healthy roster, a QB playing at an elite level, a defense allowing 10 points or less in the first half for the last month, a bad NFC, and then the Cowboys not playing to their potential, and then Brock Purdy, a great quarterback, but a quarterback because of his unique attributes, like his small hands, who really struggles in the rain, and then he had to be forced to play in the rain. Literally every single thing lined up for you, and if even just two of those seven or eight things I listed just went how they should have went, we would be talking about how we have a chance to go and beat the Detroit Lions this Sunday. And to me, that would have been the greatest playoff matchup since the Packers played the Bears back in 2010. And after going into Detroit and beating the Lions by a touchdown in late November, I really would have liked our chances. And people will say, oh, but they'll be back. They're young. They're still getting better every single year. But you just don't know. That's what they said about Joe Burrow and the Bengals the last 2 years. They almost got there. 2 years ago, they almost got there, lost the conference championship game. Again, another close game to the Chiefs. There's going to be great teams out there. And then they didn't even make the playoffs this year because of injury. And now they're paying Joe Burrow so much money, and it's so much harder to build a great team around him. And rumors are the Packers are ready to make Jordan Love one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL. And look back at the Packers
history, guys. We had an elite quarterback in Aaron Rodgers for like 14 seasons as a starter, and we only made one Super Bowl. You can't take these chances for granted, and I'm nervous for the Packers' sake. It won't be within our grasp like this year ended up truly being for a long time. So that's all we have today, folks. If you haven't already, make sure to subscribe. Give me a review so I can hear what you guys think about the podcast and tell your friends about Packers Now so that they can get all the latest updates on the green and gold, because it's always Packers season at Packers Now. Thanks, guys.